You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so glad you're joining me for this episode. As always, please rate, subscribe, comment, tell your friends, your family, your audition buddies, everyone, because without you, I'd be nothing. So please, tell everyone so they can listen. And of course, I'd be nothing without the Broadway Podcast Network as well. So thank you to Alan, Dory, Katie, Yo, Patrick. You're all fabulous and wonderful. And also, if you listen to Josh Johnston's episode, two episodes back, we were talking about Radio Play Revival. His podcast, his incredible podcast featuring legends like Samuel L. Jackson and Jessica Chastain, so many fabulous people, that's on Broadway Podcast Network now as well. So you can listen to that on BPN. So download the app and go to bpn.fm for more. I'm so excited to share this episode with you featuring Christine Petty, the Lady of a Thousand Voices. She has been one of my biggest inspirations for so long. So I'm so glad I get to talk with her in this way. I first met her doing Covenant House Sleep Out and fangirled over her. And then we stayed in touch, and I asked her, since I became the director of programming at Green Room 42, to do a residency there. She just had a show in January, and she has two more shows coming up at the Green Room 42. She has one on February 20th and one on March 31st, both at 9:30. So please check those out. Head to the Green Room 42 website to get your tickets now. And if you can't make it to the theater, there are live stream tickets available as well. Speaking of Green Room 42, I have an announcement to make. I've been there as director of programming for 7 months now, and I am about to conclude my run. I had a wonderful time, and I learned so much about myself and the industry and the art of cabaret and concert. But what I learned most importantly was about one massive thing, and that's finally putting myself first. Hustle is a huge part of being a multi-hyphenate, but how you hustle is even more important. And I wasn't hustling the right way. I wasn't putting myself first, and I was starting to watch different parts of my life sort of deteriorate for those reasons. So I'm putting a boundary up with myself. I'm taking care of myself, and I'm going to be able to still be a multi-hyphenate, an actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster, but this time I'm taking a page from my book, because without boundaries, without taking care of myself first, I'm not going to be an artist at all. So I'll miss so much of what I get to do at the Green Room 42. I will. And I'll do it in other ways, but I'll still be in the photo studio. My book is coming out. I have other projects to announce soon. I'll still be doing my podcast. I'll still be writing. There's still so much to do, but now I get to do it on my own pace because I'm taking care of myself. How lucky am I to do that? So yeah. That's all I got to say about that. And I'm pretty proud of myself, to be honest. It feels good. It feels good to take care of myself. And I hope that you get to take care of yourself as well. Anyway, moving on, I wanted to share something that I discovered in the studio today. I had a wonderful client, my 12 o'clock client. Wonderful client, super prepared, super present and made great choices behind the lens. But She had brought, it was my two-look package, and she was very adamant on having one outfit that included flannel. It was like a black tank, a sweater, and then flannel on top of it to show like she could do Ozark and she could do something dystopian or post-apocalyptic, not to quote Drag Race, but post-apocalyptic and Handmaid's Tale, you know, Hunger Games vibe. And she didn't need it. And I could tell that she was a little wary at first about it because it was almost like a crutch. Like the flannel equaled, you know, it equals A, B, and C. And while that's true about many things you wear in the headshot session, you don't need them to be a crutch. The stories do not come with what you're wearing. The stories come with what you are presenting with your energy. What I mean by that is so many people are like, what constitutes as a look? And every photographer has a different, you know, rule. But mine is it's a vibe. Each vibe is a look. So dystopian, post-apocalyptic, Hunger Games, Ozark, Handmaid's Tale vibe, that energy is one look. But the way that you come up with that look is through collaboration with your photographer. You communicate that. The photographer then comes up with the lighting, the background, the vibe, and then the actor brings it forward in the lens. The wearing of the clothes should only enhance it. The flannel would only distract it. The flannel is this crutch for that'll do the storytelling, but that's not true. The flannel doesn't do the storytelling. You do the storytelling. And we saw that in the lens today. So I want to share my thoughts on that. You know, there are two things. One, Coco Chanel always says this. Well, she said this. She's not with us anymore. If she still was saying this, you know, as an empath, I feel like I'd pick up on it already. But, well, you know, she said before you, and I'm paraphrasing, always take something off before you leave the house to edit, you know? And I think that's wonderful. And that applies to headshots. What also applies to headshots is something Michelle Visage says on Drag Race. And that's stop relying on that body. And it's true. Stop relying on that flannel. You are the ones that are telling the story. Keep it simple. If it enhances the vibe, if it enhances the story, absolutely. But remember, you are the one that is ultimately telling the story, not your flannel. Get it? Got it? So think about that when coming up with your looks for your headshots. Do you absolutely need it? Or can you put it into the headshot yourself? It's all about storytelling, my friends. Everything we do is storytelling. Making a podcast, storytelling. Auditioning, storytelling. Getting your headshots done, storytelling. And speaking of storytelling, I am so excited to welcome my guest, Christine Petty, to the Dear Multi-Hyphenate family. I'm so excited. Christine Petty is known as the Lady of a Thousand Voices, and she really is. I mean, if you've heard an impression of Angela Lansbury or Patti LuPone or Bernadette Peters or Merman, it's Christine Petty. If you listen to the Howard Stern Show and you hear Joan Rivers calling in from the pearly gates, that's Christine Petty. She's incredible, and I grew up listening to her on Sirius XM Radio alongside Seth Rudetsky and Julie James, and also the Forbidden Broadway cast albums. She is a legend, and she has been on Broadway thrice, in Chicago, in Little Me, and in Talk Radio. She was also on The Sopranos, and she's also made famous Shit Liza Says. So you know her, you love her, and you've certainly heard her. I'm so excited to welcome to Dear Multi-Hyphenate, Christine Petty.
I have been listening to this guest. I'm going to take out, because the last time I told an audience how long I've been listening to this guest, it didn't cause a rift between us, but I certainly got a glance as to never do that again. So, but I'm just going to say for a long time, I've been listening to this person on Sirius XM Radio, on Forbidden Broadway cast albums, on YouTube. I mean, this performer and now friend is quotable, is inimitable, and just downright amazing. I am so excited to welcome to Dear Multi-Hyphenate the lady, the dame, the OG lady of a thousand voices.
Christine Somebody else Petty. Used that term, OG. I didn't know what it meant. And then they told me, I'm like, yeah, all right. Okay. The I'm OG. Really not. I mean, Marilyn Michaels is the real OG. You don't even know who she is. But if you look her up on YouTube, Marilyn Michaels is who I watched when I was a little girl on all the variety shows where people who do what I do had opportunities to do it, you know, like and reach a broad audience. So Marilyn Michaels, who's still around, and in very good voice in New York, was the real OG.
Well, we were sort of talking about other opportunities where performers, performers could get their start, like the new faces of, you know, 58 or 63, and also like the upstairs and the downstairs. We were talking about that in your dressing room at Green Room 42 before your show, and you know what it would take to do something like that where people can really show off their writing skills and their comedy skills on a macro level, like a Broadway stage. Why do you think, something like that would happen today? Or do you think like spaces like 54 Below, Green Room 42, Birdland, Joe's Pub are those new spaces?
Well, there's certainly the new spaces, but the, you know, as is the case with everything in New York City, the cost, I think, is just a lot more. I can't speak honestly from personal experience. I don't know what it cost back then, but I know that these were more, I think the places you're talking about were more like joints and just more affordable, I believe. Just going to a Broadway show was more affordable. I have a relative of my grandmother's generation named Tom Petty, who was in the original Guys and Dolls. He played Harry the Horse. And I met a woman, a friend of a friend, and she said, "Wait a minute, you're related to Tom Petty?" And I said, "Yeah." She went, "I didn't know you were related to that you were that Petty." She said, "I saw Guys and Dolls 52 times." I said, "What?" She went, "I went every Friday night after my secretarial job. I got a standing room ticket every Friday night to Guys and Dolls, and I saw it 52 times. And you were able to do that as a resident of New York City. You were able to really soak up a lot, you know, on whatever budget you were on. And I'm not so sure it's quite as affordable now. People do it, though. You know, nobody you and I know are rolling in dough. I mean, but we have hardcore fans and friends who show up at these places. Hmm. I think the proportion of your weekly salary, however, is more than it was once upon a time. I can't quite tell if it's the art form that just isn't of interest to people as much. You never go to see cabaret shows or there's sketch comedy. Mm-mm. I mean, and it's not like it's as if sketch comedy is relegated just to, not relegated like it's a, you know, it's a quarantine of some sort, but to improv companies like Upright Citizens Brigade or the Groundlings in LA. I mean, you say sketch comedy and you think that, but I'm talking about people who, you know, write sketches and do them. And I mean, I guess I did the closest to that with Forbidden Broadway and definitely Newsical the Musical, because we were more likely to have, not as often as I would have liked, trust me, but just a funny sketch, short but funny. And I don't know why people are not as it may be a cyclical thing. I, you know, it just may be a cultural cycle of some sort.
I think it has to do with two things. I think one, we take ourselves very seriously today. I think we take ourselves extremely seriously and rightfully so. I mean, there are things that we have to talk about in our art that in order for us to get to the next place, the next step, I think we have to talk about, and it has to show up in our art. And I do feel like at times we have lost our sense of humor, and unfortunately, the spaces in which we have humor, like sketch musical theater, and that old feeling of the upstairs and the downstairs, that really, let's write something, try it out, and do it in front of an audience. I don't think it exists in this moment right now because other things have taken its place. And there, but then that is also morphed into like different like new collectives and round tables and groups like Musical Theater Factory and Live and in Color, these groups that are cultivating the new generation of writers. It's just done in a much, I think, much more structured, and I don't want to say serious, because there are still shows that have levity and there's still comedy shows being written, but I think the stakes are higher in terms of people wanting to be seen and be heard. Back, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, based on what I've read, you know, in Madeline Kahn's biography, it was just, they were doing it for fun and they were doing it because there was, they couldn't do anything else. And that was how they expressed themselves. But I think it's just different today. So hopefully, I don't know how you feel about that, but hopefully we do start to see what today's version of that is, because I long for it. I listen to the Forbidden Broadway cast albums, and I would love to be in an audience and see that. And
well, I think the medium has changed too. I mean, people go to YouTube when they think of a funny idea. Even I do. You know, I mean, look, I, you know, my Liza Minnelli bits are, they're heavily edited, but there was nothing to keep me and my friends from having just brainstormed, and instead of filming what we did, just writing it all down and editing it and cleaning it up on paper instead of on film, and then creating you know, an on stage shit Liza says moment. It's innately created for the small screen. I mean, that's the energy of the dialogue and the energy of the content is meant for quick edits and for film, for video. But, and that's where our head was, and so that's what we created. But none of us ever thought, well, let's do, look, believe me, if I could find a partner who was creative and do a reboot, a Nichols and May for the 21st century, just me and another talented guy, and just sit on stage and create scenes and stories, I'd be the happiest woman alive. You know, I don't know where to find these people. I have a lot of talented friends, a lot of talented friends and funny friends. I don't know that they, how do I put it? And if they're listening, they'll think, well, I could write. And I'm like, that's not what I mean. And I can write too, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't walk around with a pen and paper in my purse or a dictation. I don't do it. I don't know what it is.
This is a podcast for multi-hyphenates, and for people that think they are, people that are, people that aren't and want to understand more. Like, this is just dissecting sort of the theater multi-hyphenate and how we handle multiple proficiencies at once, how interests become part of our professional identity, how we make money off of A, B, and C. And what would you, since you started off with saying I'm not a writer, what would you say your hyphens are?
Well, the first big hyphen is my work in radio. I started in radio in college. I went to college, to Fordham University, not to be a performer. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a musical theater degree. I didn't. My college career nights really kept that a secret, let me tell you, in my fancy prep school that I went to. That was just nowhere on the table. Had I known, all right, but I didn't know anything about it. It was never an option. It was never discussed. It was mm-hmm. my parents probably would have said okay. I you know, they were pretty open, but I had a limited amount of options because of money, and I looked at Fordham University, and that was going to be one of the options because I couldn't live away. And all of a sudden, the girl who gave me the tour, who I just, as a matter of fact, this week, I donated a masterclass to the Fordham University alumni, I don't know, silent auction. She reached out to me. Isn't that funny? So many decades later. Love but. She opened the door and she said, and this is the radio station. And one full corridor of this, it's the castle on the Rose Hill campus. So it's four corridors around a courtyard, you know, three stories high, beautiful castle. One of these corridors was totally blocked off, and it was the Fordham University WFUV radio station. And it was completely student run. And I said, well, what is this? And she told me, and I said, wait a minute, I can take classes here. She went, no, you just volunteer. It's just like a club almost, you know? Wow. And that was it. I said, if I can do that, I mean, if I can play, I can make radio, like who, what are you talking about? This is a no-brainer. And I was going to be a communications major anyway. I was almost going to be a art therapy child psychologist, but I went to Fordham and I saw that radio station and I thought, oh no, this is everything. And my two best friends are still are people I met at that radio station. It was full of young students who from morning to night created news, sports, music programming, rock music, classical music. I became the arts editor like my junior year. So I started going to theater for free. I'll never forget calling up a press agent, asking if I could do an interview. She went, all right, well, I got to get you into the show then. And I went, what? She said, yeah, let me get you into the show. When can you go? I went, this was, remember, giving a college student who didn't have a pot to piss in free tickets to a show. I didn't understand that. Oh, I picked it up very quickly, let me tell you. So I would take the Ram van, because the Ram is the Fordham Rams is the mascot, from the Rose Hill campus in the Bronx to the Lincoln Center campus. And then I would walk to the theater district and see plays and then walk all the way back to Lincoln Center because I had no money, you know, I couldn't afford buses. And I'd take the Ram, it was a dollar to take the Ram van back to the Bronx and then I'd drive home. And I did that. And the shows that I saw, oh my God. So that really started me into radio. But when I graduated, there were no radio jobs and I just temped, you know, and I was really stupid. Boy, was I dumb. But anyway, I temped and I knew all the radio stations locally because I had friends who worked at them and there were no jobs to speak of. And I started doing community theater. And after a few years of community theater, doing great roles like Evita and Funny Girl and Audrey and Little Shop, and you know, I mean, just incredible, My Fair Lady, really great roles in very, very, very well produced productions. Mm-hmm. That's where I met John Tracy Egan, who is a dear friend. He and I did, I forget, some children's theater together. And so Doreen Montalvo, we did Grease together.
Oh, wow.
And so, after a couple of years of that, I realized I had a temp job that was with a telethon. I did manage to get something in, you know, in television, but it was just a secretarial job, and I loved my boss, but I hated my job, and it took me 2 years to get up the gumption to leave the job. Mm-hmm. I waited a year so I could get dental with my health insurance, mm-hmm. and I had all four wisdom teeth removed on the day I had dental, and I thought, now I'm going to quit. And it took me another year to get up the gumption to quit. And I pursued a career as an actress with no experience other than community theater. Only one friend, John, who was in the business, and I knew nothing. So it took years before I got my first real proper, I'll call it my first real proper full-time job, which was with Forbidden Broadway. Mm. And then I stayed with the family in the first job I had with them was what the heck did I do? Then that big national tour, big non-equity national tour, 67 cities in 104 days.
Wow.
Yeah. And we only had 5 days off where we weren't traveling or performing. It was amazing. I was young.
Yeah.
And then I went on to many, many, many different companies. So I was working actress in the theater. And then it took, I got to think of the timeline, like another 15 years. And my friend from Fordham University, Paul Cavalcante, who is a major DJ here in New York City on three major New York City radio stations, including the Fordham University radio station, WFUV, which is renowned. You've got to listen. People can listen now on their, I can't say it out loud, Alexa. because if I say it too loud, it'll she'll do things.
She'll say, "What do you want?"
Yeah. And anyway, he said that Sirius XM Radio was looking for someone to host their On Broadway channel. They had not gone public yet. They were still in test markets, but they were about to, and they were finishing up, you know, manning up all the different channels. And on September 9th, 2001, I interviewed, and he said, we'd like to use you. Somebody will call you. On September 11th, I was supposed to have another interview for the Jazz Channel.
Wow.
Which never happened. Mm-hmm. And it took them until the spring. I assume they didn't want me, really, because mm-hmm. it took them until the spring to finally get me on payroll and start me up. Wow. So it's been 20 years this spring. So wow. That's the big hyphenate. And I remember reaching a point where I said, wait a minute. I did a little math, and I said, I've actually made back the money I spent in college to pay for my communications degree. I've actually made back the money in a job in communications.
There you go.
And so that was the big hyphenate. And then many years after that, Gerard Alessandrini from Forbidden Broadway had been closed for years now, and I had been not been with the company for a decade. You know, I had been with Newsical the Musical. Anyway, he wanted to get together, and he sat down with me saying he had an idea for a new show, and would I be interested? He wanted me to produce it, not to be in it, but to produce it with David Zippel. And I was like, what's he talking about? Like, you know, and he said, I think you and I have a good shorthand, which we do. And I always got along with Gerard and mm-hmm. understood his work style, which is, you know, specific to him. And he said, here it is. And he laid down a script, and it said Spamilton. And it had that iconic star with the silhouette of Hamilton, but instead of the fist in the air. He has his thumb. He's thumbing his nose.
Yeah. It's so good.
And I looked at it and I went, sure. Because I knew immediately, not, you know, I knew I would never be unhappy with anything Gerard wrote. I mean, I, you know. And so there was that was a big hyphenate. And I remember at some point when I was, Jordan Roth said to me, when I was producing Hamilton and I was in it, and I think he's a listener. He said, you know, you're one of the rare people that I can think of who is on stage talent, but also a producer and also a member of the press mm-hmm. who can, you know, wear all those hats. Mm-hmm. And I believe probably I'm thinking about it. Seth Rudetsky, I don't know that. Yeah. I guess he was a producer probably, yeah, of you know,
Disaster.
Disaster. He certainly was in it, and mm-hmm. he's a member of the press. Mm-hmm. At the time, you know, I was very impressed with that mm-hmm. he said that, until I realized just the other day that when you were telling me about hyphenates, there's other people who've done that. Not that many, you know what I mean?
I mean, to burst your bubble.
You know,
but
George Bernard Shaw maybe did it, you know, when he did some stage work. He also wrote. And then, of course, he was a member, started out as a member of the press. So those are, you know, three hyphenates under the same umbrella. I think they're certainly tangential and nothing. It's not like I'm also a expert fly fisherman or something.
Well, I love that you say that, because even if you do have I think what gets confusing with multi-hyphenates is like if you have a hobby or you do have a side business, it doesn't necessarily mean it goes into your multi-hyphenate identity. I think everything has to bleed together. You are a member of the press. You use those interviews to make connections, or you are able to talk about the projects that you're working on the press that you've produced on the side. The way that it bleeds together, it all informs each other. And I love, and I don't have too many people on this podcast that started in the industry as something else and then became a performer. My friend Robbie Roselle, I was just at dinner with him the other day, and he has the same sort of experience. He did not start as a performer in the industry, and now is a performer in the industry. And I love that you started as in the radio. And I didn't start in the industry in the radio, but I had the same situation. I got at Ithaca College. I got a tour of the communications building, and it happened to be Sunday morning and I my friend was giving me a tour of one of the recording rooms, and she said, "This is my friend Cassie, and she hosts Best of Broadway, WICB." And oh, I wow. And I literally looked at her and I said, "Honey, do you have any idea what you're doing?"
Yeah.
And she said, "No, not really." And I said, can I join you as a co-host every Sunday?" And she said, "Absolutely." And we hosted the show together. And she was playing things like, and I love these shows, of course, like My Fair Lady, Guys and Dolls, things like that. But then I was like, well, what about the things that are playing off Broadway in the city right now? What yeah. about the cult, the things that are shaping culture, the things that are showing up in college auditions, the things that are showing up on the Ithaca College main stage? Let's play those cast albums. Let's do interviews. We brought Andrea Burns in and Nihal Joshi because they were doing Next to Normal at the Hangar Theater. So we brought them in live, and guess who my biggest inspiration was for how I was hosting? It was the Three Amigos over at SiriusXM. It was you, Seth, and Julie. Like, listening, having you in my ear, going to, you know, my high school shows and listening with my mom, and we got SiriusXM because of Howard Stern. And we were like, oh my God.
Who I'm actually, you know, I do voices for Howard Stern.
I hope he's one. Please tell me he's one. I know that if I were to ever meet him, I would not shake his hand because I know he doesn't like handshakes, but I get a good vibe from him and I hope he's wonderful.
Howard Stern has a connection to my college radio station. We only had two grown-ups who worked there, the general manager and the chief engineer. And the chief engineer knew Howard when he worked up at WRNW, which is referred to in the movie that he made.
Private
and always has said nice things about Howard. And I met him at an event. It was like a telethon. This was before he had just started in New York, because I also interned at WNBC Radio just before Howard started. And I actually worked for Pig Vomit, the guy that was the program manager. He was everything Howard said he was. He right. used to pin me up against the Xerox machine. I mean, yeah. But I had such a good sense of humor about it. And, you know, I just didn't take anything he did seriously. Right. But trust me, that guy would be in a whole hell of a lot of trouble these days. He was a right. harmless guy, actually. He was actually totally harmless. And he probably would have been put in his place in an easier, simpler way mm-hmm. had it been a different time. But anyway, I just have always gotten good vibes about him. My personal vibes, everything I've been told about him. And I just get this sense when I listen to him, even though he says some of the skeeviest things at times, especially farther, you know, down the line in the past, you know. But I've always liked the guy. I just always liked the guy.
I think he has a really interesting way of connecting liberals and conservatives together. And there was a critic that said that Hillary Clinton's biggest mistake in the 2016 election was not going on, was not accepting Howard Stern's invitation and going on his show.
Well, that's really interesting, because I know a lot of people who listen to him and I go, really? It's like yeah. that. I just think I didn't think you would, you know?
Yeah.
But if you ever hear Joan Rivers on the Howard Stern show coming in from heaven, that's me.
Oh, that's you.
Yeah, that's me.
That's amazing, because they were friends.
Yeah, of course. He misses her terribly. And he, you know, yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing.
And she was another one who was always, I met her a couple of times very briefly, and she was always kind and polite and elegant and I just always got the best vibe from her. And as a matter of fact, I have to tell this story, that the day she passed, I was at a rare Thursday matinee of Phantom of the Opera. And I was with my niece, and it was Sierra Boggess and Norm Lewis. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to see it, because these were two people that I love very much. And it was at intermission, and my niece said, "Oh God, Joan Rivers passed." And I was like, so sad, you know. So at the end of the show, I was waiting to say hi to Norm. We were on stage. Everybody was on stage, which is the thing now. You don't go to dressing rooms. You wait on stage. And right. everybody was talking to their pockets of friends. And James Monroe Iglehart was there too, because he was working, but it was a Thursday matinee. So he got to, you know, he got to see the show. So I was talking to Norm and James and my niece. And then I said, you know, Joan Rivers passed, but nobody knew because they had been busy. They were doing their second act. And he said, oh, wow. And Norm made an announcement to the other cast members. And we had this wonderful conversation about Joan Rivers and about how she loved the theater and how she supported it. And it really fueled her. We could feel that, you know, with her constant support of Forbidden Broadway in my case. And we gave her this little memorial. And it was on the stage of the Majestic Theater right after a performance. And I, just by talking to her, I just thought it was the loveliest way to honor her. And I was so happy that I was able to live in the wake of this bad news in an elegant and way, and to honor her in a way that I think she would have loved, knowing that the theater community was really speaking fondly of her on stage. I don't know. I just, it's a fond memory. Excuse the sirens.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's interesting that you say that, because what I love about your interviews and when I listen to you on Sirius, the way that you bring perspective and meaning into the things that you're talking about make me go, and this is, you know, I love to ask my clients, and I go, whose careers do you want to steal? And I don't mean that like in a, you're going to take them away. But when you're in the headshot session, when you're in a headshot session with me, I want it to be as specific as possible. So if you're telling me you want a Rachel Brosnahan and you want something that you can do, you know, Maisel by day, and then an indie film where, you know, you're a mom running away, a single mom running away from, you know, whatever, a drama by night, we're going to do that in a headshot session. We're going to dissect that. And so a big question is, whose career do you want to steal? When they move on to other types of work, who interests you right now? And you are one of the people that I say, because of the type of work that you do and the way that you do it, the way that you can just bring in a story, a perspective, and make it something beautiful and positive. It's why I'm in the industry, because people like you are storytellers and you make everything you do about the moment. And I think it's one of my favorite things about you and how you approach your work.
Well, thank you. It means a lot to me, because that's what I strive for. I mean, we're not here to just sing along to 76 trombones again. Right. You just have to look at things from a different, every time you, repetition often reveals something new. And that's why I tell people, look, you know who Lilo is? Lilo,
yes,
is in the original
Can-Can.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think she's still alive.
Oh.
at like, she's probably close to 100 now.
I met her at Sirius
through Jonathan Burrows. Like, he was of the Burrows family, like Abe Burrows, and because he had produced Can Can. And so, and Lilo is this spitfire of a woman. She's this petite little spitfire of a woman and no nonsense. You've gained weight. You put on weight. You know, she's that kind of a woman, you know.
Oh, I like her.
Anyway, I took her to see Marilyn May, which she loved, obviously. And then we went to see Can Can at the Paper Mill Playhouse. But I remember I had tickets to see Kiss Me, Kate. I offered to take her to Kiss Me, Kate. And she said, no, I don't want to go. I saw it already. And I thought to myself, I think she saw it in 1946. I think that's what she means. And so I've seen Chicago 21 times at this point.
And you were in it as well.
I was in it as well, but I never tire of seeing Chicago. And there are so many shows that are worthy of revisiting, and things resonate differently. And listening to the songs, you know, I just had a revelation about Sendin' the Clowns the other day that I just said, wow, how did I not figure this out? After years and years of listening to the song, how did I not come to this conclusion? I don't know if anybody agrees with me, but it's that Glynis Johns was, you know, limited vocally. So he had to write around her limited range. Now, what you get is da 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 da. And I thought, but that gives you also the sense of somebody who doesn't have any air left in her, like she's deflated. She's spent because she can't go farther up the vocal chain. It's also the emotional ladder. She just can't climb, take another step up the ladder. She's done everything she could. It's over. Everything crashed. And so it's when somebody says to you, what happened? And you just say, I don't know. It just, this is what happened. I can't. I tried. I can't.
I can't.
There's nothing we can do. And the cadences are the way you would talk after you've just got off the phone and had a terrible breakup. And it wasn't like he was a fucking idiot. You know, he was an idiot. It was more like, yep, this isn't going to work. You, that hollow, exhausted kind of, and I've never considered the song that way. Maybe because the melody is so bloody gorgeous, and that's been just rubbing me up and down and making me excited all these years. But I suddenly said, wow, it's just the way you would talk to somebody who called you up and said, how did it go? What happened? You know, even the, well, maybe next year, it's like you, maybe next year, it's that final little, that little... So you have to just keep on looking and looking again. And that's if that kind of revelation thrills you. There are people out there, you know.
That's my favorite revelation I had is my favorite musical is Les Mis. And in Who Am I, it's a huge deciding moment for Valjean. Huge, huge, huge. And he is wondering if he's going to... go to the court and say, this guy that you've arrested is not who you think it is. I'm Jean Valjean.
Right.
And, you know, and in the music you hear One Day More. It's the same.
Right.
And you hear da 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 da. And when he is going through all of these questions, we're meeting Eponine, Cosette, Marius. We're meeting everyone while he's making that decision, because if he doesn't make that decision, he's not going to find love with Cosette. He's not going to know, like, he's just not.
Oh.
And so it's almost like this, like, go in this direction. We're going to meet these people. All of these people are going to come into your life. And so we actually are meeting these characters before he does, before the audience does. And it's like this alluding to him going in that direction. And I think that's my dissection of it and my, that's my perspective, but I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah. And you know, it's some of these things don't hit you right away.
No, it's true.
And you can just completely, you know, my favorite Sondheim song, theater song, is No More from Into the Woods, which it's just the gift that keeps on giving, you know, it just never stops. And what did I don't know. I had another revelation about it. I have had so many that it's, you know, and it's always been my regret that I had a long letter drafted to him that I never sent him because it was a heavy one, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, and the flip side is, this is just the flip side of all this is my brother, who was a news junkie, especially, you know, during the Trump administration, when we were all like always watching television every night, waiting for the new fresh hell and the new, like, what, you know,
what?
My brother discovered my channel because he could have cared less. He didn't go out of his way to get Sirius. And then he had it, got a new car. He had me and he started listening.
Wow.
He's like, you know, this music, I tell you, it elevates your mood. You can't be in a bad mood when you listen to it. I'm like, and he really likes it because it takes him out of his, you know, the reality of the terrible, terrible world we're in. And I know I have not watched the news since like January 20th of last year. I mean, I don't know who the governor of New York is anymore. I don't know anything. I don't know what's going on in Russia, or I don't know anything. I don't care. I do care. I just don't have any stamina.
I feel hungover.
I was spent. Yeah, yeah.
I feel
yeah.
hungover from.
I'm not proud, but.
I feel the same way. I was up to date on everything during the Trump administration. And then now, and we need to still be holding our administration accountable for things. It's, you know, not perfect, but I'm also hungover. You know, I'm a COVID long hauler. I'm dealing with COVID long hauler shit every single day. I'm just also like,
what does that mean, COVID long hauler?
So I had COVID in March of 2020, and I am dealing with extreme changes in my health since then.
Really?
Yes. I didn't tell you this. Yeah. Really bad. Really bad too. I'm physically a different person. And so my limitations and my capabilities have changed completely, but it's not necessarily a bad thing because I'm doing things in my life now to change and make it more manageable and take care of myself. Something that I've never done in my life.
Right.
I've never taken care of myself.
Well, I can tell you that it will probably, it could be indeed a blessing in disguise, because a lot of people your age don't think about taking care of themselves until they're my age. And then you got a lot of catching up to do. But to be forced to really address things now will probably serve you better and probably save you some aggravation on other fronts, physically and, you know, and so forth. So it could be a blessing in disguise, I have to say.
I do think so. And I think, you know, we're all always learning, that we're going to be learning forever. And this is my big thing that I'm going through. And there are certain things that I want to do and I can't do unless I make certain changes. And there are things that I want to, or I'm used to doing, that I can't do anymore. And I don't have to any, you know what I mean? So, a friend of mine said the other day, you need to stop looking at the industry from the outside in. You are a part of it. And I got so emotional because it's like, I'm still hustling at times as if I'm not a part of the industry.
Oh, Angel, that's never going to stop.
I know. You're like,
how should I put it? Let me rephrase that. The hustle will never stop.
Right.
The sense of belonging, you can work on that. You can fix that. But the hustle never stops.
Yeah.
It never, ever stops.
Exactly.
And perhaps the goal is to just appreciate the high part of the hustle and not the grind part of the hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, as you go on, you realize, well, this is my choice. This is what I, you know, what I wanted to do. And, I mean, look, I was lucky enough to be in a long-term job for 2 decades. I had Forbidden Broadway for the better part of 10 to 15 years all over the world. There was always a company for me, you know, and then musical I did for 10 years. But none of those things paid enough money to survive solely on those salaries. So I always had the side hustles, always, always, always. That I have had to have 3 jobs for 20 years. To sustain a life in New York City. Mm-hmm. And none of them are high paying jobs. Mm-hmm. They're all very, very, very modest to low paying jobs. But together, you know, they kept my head above water. So the hustle part, you know, and the hustle part, as long as the world is evolving and changing, the hustle will continue because you have to morph. And look, I moved, okay? And just looking through the backs of closets in very organized, tidy boxes, by the way, because I'm organized, but I kept a lot of stuff. But I found boxes of my Europe photographer, of my postcards with my headshots on them. Back in the day when we used to, you know, have postcards made of our headshots, and we used to sit down and handwrite or print out on our computer labels and send postcards out to casting directors. That was the hustle then. Never got you a job. I mean, it never got you anything, but we did it. And then I have cassette tapes of my voiceover work that had funny little labels that I made with the voice bubble on it. And I have a box of those. That was the hustle then. Mm-hmm. Now those things have to be transferred, and I have to, you know, you have to, the mediums change and you got to transfer everything to the new medium. And it's exhausting. So I transferred them over to CD. Now I have boxes of CDs that I just finished labeling like 5 years ago. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, now I have to put them all, but I have to tell you, I still am hesitant to have electronic copies and only electronic copies of things, because I really feel that if there's some sort of a major catastrophe in the world, and, you know, if they had computers, okay, 500 years ago, we wouldn't be able to read their data now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If they had computers and then something happened and there was an asteroid hit, all right, and then a new version of mankind showed up and, you know, came out of the ashes, they'd be looking at this data and wouldn't know how to, you know, but a piece of paper, a rock, something chiseled in stone,
yes. Yeah.
You know, something drawn on a cave, something on a ceiling of a, you know, I don't know. But anyway, that's just my paranoia.
I think it's wild. I think it's wild that they built the pyramids. We don't know how they built the pyramids.
But see, that's the thing. But at least we have them.
Yeah.
So stuff disappears. And I think the first thing to go is going to be everything that's electronic. So I have stunning photographs, and I want to make picture books out of them and stuff. Just, I don't know why, but it's all, that's like your hustle at home. That's the home hustle. So there's constant, there's always something to do.
You have such an interesting career to me, because it's like, you know, you made your Broadway debut in Little Me, and then you did talk radio, and then, or you did Chicago first and then talk radio.
No, I did Little Me and talk radio. Yeah.
So then Chicago.
There's a long pause between dances. Trust me, it's long.
Well, I'm still waiting for my first punch of my dance card. So, uh-huh. You know, we'll figure it out. But it was Bach for a while and Wicked, and now it's not. Now, but it's always been for me Roger Debris, Thenardier, everything. But I look
right.
I look like I'm in middle school, except not with the beard. But when I shave, I look like I'm in middle school. So what do I do? Well, I got to figure out how to be a part of the industry and pay my bills and create art and, you know,
right.
Do all those things while I'm waiting for those, for me to grow into those roles and those breakdowns.
Yes, but Michael, I would just like to turn this all back on to you and say, why don't you create sketch comedy the very thing that you started to talk to me about, and just create sketch comedy and create sketches for somebody who looks like he's in middle school, or just somebody who doesn't look like he's in middle school, just somebody who is an actor, who is acting, who somebody who looks like you, who has a quirky problem in a,
yeah,
in a sketch, and just, you know.
I have 2 1 person shows. My first one is Moo With Me, which I did a few times in like 2008. And that's about when I photographed Idina Menzel. And so I have that show, which definitely needs a dusting off, the dusting off, and also like a rewrite, because then I went on to photographing our Carnegie Hall show, which is a story on, all on its own. So I have to do that, and because I love her so much, like love her. And so I so much that I wrote a one person play about it, and then I have 54 Below in June asked me to help reopen the space with a show for Pride Month. And I did Michael Kushner Sings His Hits. And it was from sort of the perspective of that I've won, you know, my 3 Tonys, and that I'm, you know, doing my residency at 54 Below. And that was songs with like Springtime for Hitler and, you know, Bette Midler's Friends. And and the song that I told you about, I think the one that I learned about from the Carol Channing documentary, she sings in the there's a 3-second clip of her going, anyone who's anyone is Jewish. And, and I was like, what is that song? And it was Madeline Kahn is my favorite of all time.
Yeah.
And so I was Facebook friends with this person, and when I looked up the song on Googled it, I saw that the Facebook friend wrote it for the Upstairs and the Downstairs. And he told me, because I was going to sing it in my show, and I did, he said, the only people that have sung this before you is Betty Aberlin, Carol Channing, and Madeline Kahn. And I would be the fourth person. And I wound up singing it. And it was it's basically a patter song of all 60s people that anyone who's anyone is Jewish. And, you know, Beatrice Lily and her yarmulke and, you know, things. It was a great song. But the fact it was it was all beshared. It was all meant to be. And it was the fact that, you know, there was Madeline, and then there was the Upstairs of the Downstairs moment. And then it was like, I was Facebook friends with this guy, and like, it was just amazing. And that to me is what is so special about it. But I do have shows, and I need to do them more. And you're completely right. And I love that I'm getting a lesson.
But you don't even have to make them a full evening. You know what I mean? You could just write a sketch. You could just write a 2-minute sketch. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a monologue. It can be, with somebody else. It can be, you know, I remember Carol Burnett, she did something, and I said to her, I don't know her well, but she recognizes me occasionally. And she's seen Forbidden Broadway many times. And I remember saying, I saw a one woman show that was about an English music hall performer that none of us would know, but maybe people in England would. And I thought it would be good for her. And she said, you know, I like having people, I like looking them in the eye, you know, I just need to have somebody to bounce off of. Anyway, it's just, I'm just talking at you the way you were talking in the beginning. It doesn't have to be one person shows, because those are daunting, and they, you know, just create small little nuggets.
And what I said before, it's we're all learning. And if I'm gonna get a lesson today, it's gonna I'll take it from Christine Petty. We have to wrap up, unfortunately. But you know, you do, just in wrapping up,
well, I have to wrap up because there's 7 ambulances outside. Can you hear them?
Hopefully none
of my
you.
Buildings or my buildings on fire. I don't know.
Well, if you smell anything, get out. The podcast it's not that important. But so you have you're doing a residency at the Green Room 42, and which is very exciting. The first show was, I was hollering the entire time, but you know, in the theme of learning about stuff, is there anything that you're sharing that's new, or you learned about yourself in doing the first show, you know, one of the first after a pandemic or in the middle of a pandemic? Like what for you has been new and different about being on stage in this time?
Well, you know, I have my own challenges because I'm dealing with a major handicap now that's on a daily basis taking my ability away from me because I have a vision loss. I'm blind in one eye and I'm losing my vision steadily in the other. And I don't want to be, I want to be hopeful that in this incredible world we live in, that, you know, they're going to have breakthroughs and stuff, but they're not fast enough for my money. So I have to handle what will become of me, literally, as far as a performer. Thankfully, I can still do radio. But as a stage performer in musical theater, I'm limited. I there's only so much I can do in a show with other people. So cabaret is really, and always has been, my favorite medium, because to be honest with you, you are the boss of you. Mm-hmm. And you make your choices and you tell your stories and you create your arc in your evening. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be that if you don't want, like that evening I put together for the first night at Green Room, I just picked what I thought was a decent selection of songs that, you know, had the wide variety of colors and, you know, ticked certain boxes, some that people expect, some that they don't, because I have to grow and do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I also expanded in that I had a guitar and a bass with my nephew, which was a dream. My father always dreamt of us working together, and he's really enjoying expanding and growing in this world because he's never done that. He's been more in the rock, independent music world.
And he was wonderful too.
Yeah, and he's a delightful delightful presence on stage. I appreciated the fact that doing this once a month is forcing me to just get it done. You know, I've always been a subscriber of just, we called it in Forbidden Broadway, I think, like guerrilla musical theater. Yeah. You know, or I call it drop your pants and go. Just you just do it until if the paint is just tacky enough to put your fingers on it, you can go out on stage. Mm-hmm. It's like wet paint, maybe not wet paint, but just slightly dry, you know. So it's giving me a forced deadline, which I appreciate. It's allowing me to work through my disability as my disability challenges me more, rather than giving me 6 months between, you know, solo cabaret shows. If I do it every month, I won't be as shocked by changes in my vision. I think what this is going to do is allow me to sort of appreciate the audience, because of the web, because of the virtual tickets. Mm-hmm. It's a new sensation knowing that people are watching. It's a lovely feeling knowing that people are watching, that they took the time, that they care enough, that they, you know, they spent the money, that they sat down on the couch, or they went into a corner with their iPad and they're focusing on me. I get that takes a lot because I can't do it myself. And so it has added a new perspective to what I do. I don't know. There's just a lot of challenges. It's my, really my favorite art form, I really have to say. It is storytelling at its most intimate. You're in a small room with, you know, a small group of people, and you're telling a story, or you're retelling a story because you didn't write it most of the time. It's somebody else's story. But you are, you're still the interpreter of it, and I just love that. Whether it's the highest comedy, you know, my favorite thing. I don't know if one of my favorite things. I've always wanted to do it for Carol Burnett. I don't know that I'll ever get the opportunity to. But the Artificial Flowers that I did, that to me is very Carol Burnettish.
So
I don't want to give away what I did, but it's to me it's very Carol Burnettish, and. I love coming up with unexpected takes on songs, and I just love the warmth of being in a cabaret. It's my favorite place to be, next to a Broadway theater, maybe more so to be in a room, because you get food, you get to eat and drink. I mean, come, I really, yeah, that just makes it as perfect can be. You get to eat and drink and be cozy, and there's not too many people around, and you get every seat's a good seat in a cabaret room, really. Honestly, even the worst seat in the house is still closer than in a Broadway theater. Yeah. So you just can't lose if you know you like the performer.
You also get to mess up. And I mean that in a positive way. Like,
I'll say.
You get to, you know what I mean? Like, and people love that. People,
do you ever?
People pay.
Or do I ever?
People want to see you. They want to see you. And some of the best ways that you could see who you are is in the in-between moments. The moments where you go, oh, what the fuck is happening next? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, when I put together a show a month, trust me, with all that wet paint, yeah, I won't know, you know, I won't know what day it is or what my name is or anything. So let alone the next lyric. So,
well, we know what your name is. We love you and we can't wait to see you. For those of you listening and wanting to see Christine Petty live, her next show at the Green Room 42 is February 20th. Virtual tickets start at $19 and in-person tickets start at $29, and then the next show March 31st, same thing, same deal, $19 virtual tickets and $29 in-person tickets. Christine Petty, you are the absolute best, and I can't wait to hang with you again soon. It's always my favorite time.
Well, you're an angel, and you're very proactive, and you're very kind, and you're very well, you're a hyphenate, you can tell, you know, but it's good. That's how we learn more about one thing gets better by all the other things we do. And I think it also helps us relax a little bit. You don't take the one thing so seriously,
yes,
you know, because you realize just how capable you are, or how possible other things are. And you know, this is what I say to all young people starting out, which you're young enough, is that if I could tell myself, look, I'll tell myself now, my decrepit old self now, but if I could tell my very young and elastic self of 30 years ago, I would just say, just relax, just unclench. This is, you know, you went into this for the joy. You didn't go into it for the money. And so, you know, if you can't enjoy it, then what's the point? And the best way to do that is to just relax. Don't sweat it. There'll be something, especially the poor people who, young people who are doing it in the pandemic. You know, if this doesn't teach you that you have to roll with it, you know, minute to minute, if you're just able to stand up and, you know, put one foot in front of the other and, you know, do your daily tasks and find a little joy and light and color and music and whatever. Just relax.
Just relax. Christine Petty, yeah. You're the best.
No, you are.
No, you are.
All right. Well, good news is my building's not on fire. So
that's good.
I've never heard more sirens in an interview in my life. My apologies. You know, it's a hotbed over here. But my building's not on fire. Somebody probably just burnt the microwave popcorn.
It happens. We've all done it.
Thank you so much to everyone who listened. Please remember to like, subscribe, comment, share with your friends, your family, your audition buddies, your professors, anyone. I'm so glad that you listen. And thank you to the Broadway Podcast Network, Alan Dory, Katie, Yo, Patrick, you're all fabulous. And again, follow Dear Multi Hyphenate on Instagram. You can contact me through my website, dearmultihyphenate.com, or dearmultihyphenate@gmail.com with any questions, comments, or concerns you might have. Be kind, be careful, and be yourself, everyone. Talk soon. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.